I'm Ryan.
Hi.
So first, before I get into my presentation, I want to thank whoever set up the agenda for putting me directly after Pierre. Awesome. So today I'm going to talk to you about something we've been working on for, I guess, about a year now, something that we're calling the IT Customer Bill of Rights. Do you know what a Customer Bill of Rights is? Customer Bill of Rights is essentially a set of statements or commitments that expresses how a service provider interacts with its customers. So that's sort of what it communicates internally within the service provider organization. But it also is something that you would publish and that communicates to our customers what they can expect from us as a service provider. So this is something that started about a year ago, and it was inspired by an article that some of us read in the in the Gazette. It was an opinion piece called "Will a New MUHC Be a Renewed MUHC?" by Dr. Sheriff Emil. Dr. Sheriff Emil is the director of pediatric, general, and thoracic surgery at the Montreal Children's Hospital at the MUHC. He's also a McGill alum who graduated several years ago and moved to the States to start practicing there. But after about 17 years of practice there, his love of McGill and of the city of Montreal drew him back, and since then he's been working at the Children's Hospital. What he noticed, though, after moving back, after that 17-year departure, was that things had really changed quite significantly at the MUHC, and not necessarily for the better. In his article, he talks about a culture of indifference that has developed at the MUHC. So that was really sort of the inspiration. I'm going to sort of read a few quotes from that article. But before I do that, I just want to make sure you all understand, I don't think the experience that he has had at the MUHC really reflects our experience at McGill. I'm not trying to draw a parallel, but I think there are lessons to be learned from his experience there, and that was really the inspiration for coming up with the Bill of Rights that I'll cover later in the presentation. So I'll start with one of his early experiences that he describes in the article. He starts by saying, "Although superb medical care is delivered every day by hundreds of skilled and selfless professionals, an unfortunate culture of indifference has crept into the hospital environment. The patient is often seen as a burden rather than the organization's raison d'etre. This is manifested hundreds of times daily in the technician who uses foul language, in the clinic clerk who speaks rudely to patients, in the nurse whose every move is saturated with frustration, in the physician who belittles the patient's concerns or never returns their messages, in the administrator who fails to listen to those in the trenches." Later on, he goes on to say, he describes an experience that he had personally. "During a visit to the Royal Vic ER for a very distressing emergency, my wife and I were never addressed by name or treated with any degree of professionalism. None of our caretakers, nurses, residents, doctors bothered to introduce themselves or clarify their roles. Simple introductions have become a luxury. When we took the time to submit a detailed report regarding another episode of blatantly substandard care that compromised our outcomes, we received a letter full of denials and excuses many months later. Healing, in every sense of the word, is where medicine starts and where it ends. Our culture of healing is suffering. And no amount of brick or mortar, not even $1.3 billion worth, can induce a culture of change. For that, our leaders first have to admit that there is a need for a change of culture." So really the point here, and again, I'm not trying to draw a parallel between that experience and what our experience in IT or at McGill, because I really do believe we all do our best every day to give the best possible service. But the point here is that it's not about a fancy building or high-end diagnostic tools or technology. It's the people that matter most. Everyone in this room, either directly or indirectly, is ultimately here to help people. I think that really dovetails well with what Pierre was saying earlier and what Hugo also mentioned. So I'm not going to go through all of these. This is not the IT Bill of Rights. This is actually what Dr. Emile had sort of proposed. And actually, I don't even know if this was how it was received at the UMHC, if they've implemented this yet. But I agree with almost all of them up there. If you look through them, there's some recurring themes. The theme of courtesy and respect, the theme of timeliness, and also privacy. So I think you can see here what this is about. This would be the kinds of things that the hospital would, you know, commit to and sort of publish and say, this is what you can expect from us when you come and visit us at the MUHC. So that was the inspiration. So what we did from that point, some of us read the article and thought, well, this, you know, we don't have those same problems, really not even close to the same degree. But we also, many of us agreed that a Bill of Rights was sort of a good thing and promotes, we talked about service excellence earlier, would be the kind of thing that would help sort of bring everyone together and have everyone make sure that everyone has the same sort of vision or understanding of what we do as an organization, and also for our customers to have a better understanding of what they can expect from us. So we put together a team composed of Maria Gosling. She was actually asked her to lead the initiative. We have Barbara Stetchison, who's actually now replacing Maria. Maria left at the end of March. We had Sangamitra Dutt. We had Layard Lee. Elliot Stekowicz, who has obviously been promoted to CIO. Sorry, Gillen. We have Dennis Hasen Wong. So that's the group. We tried to get representatives from all, almost all of our units. They had several meetings. They did a lot of collaborating over the several months that they met. And they reviewed over 30 different customer Bill of Rights from both the public and private sector for inspiration. So how the bill came to be? You see we a lot. It's not, I don't include myself here. I guess I was the sponsor of the project, but these are the actual slides that the team has used in their presentations. Some of you may have actually seen some of this already. The team has actually been going around to all of many of the sort of manager team meetings in each of the units to present the draft Bill of Rights that you'll see in a moment. So the initial approach was to be sort of end-user focused. Sort of talk about one-on-one or individual interactions with customers or users. There are several key themes that came out of the research, and you'll sort of see that evolve in the following four Bill of Rights. The goal was to use short, concise, relatable language in the bill. You have things that are easy to understand and remember. The final product focuses on a commitment to individuals. Like I said, it's not about our commitment necessarily to the big, you know, to everyone. It's all about the one-on-one interactions that we have with people. And we only put in comments that we felt we could deliver on. So this is the first. It's the first for a reason. We wanted the first commitment to be about us, to describe us as an organization. We are experts. We maintain and develop our skills and tools, and we give the best quality possible. So I think Hugo earlier was talking about the difference between being a order taker and just sort of receiving. I think we have to acknowledge, and it's, I think, important to sort of promote the fact in the face of our customers and end users that we truly are experts in our field. Timeliness, that was another big theme and something we really wanted to cover. I think this is an area that we sometimes in IT struggle with more than some of the others. But it's certainly something our customers expect from us, so it's something we wanted to make sure that we covered in this Bill of Rights. And even in situations where we can't be timely, I think it's important to be transparent and upfront. You know, if we're not going to be able to meet the timeline of their request, you know, we need to acknowledge that and say, look, I can't do it right now. Something else, I have a higher priority thing on my desk, but I promise to get back to you within X minutes or days or weeks even. I think we also need to acknowledge that in IT, a lot of what we do, you know, can't always be solved right away. You know, IT can be very, very complex and can, in many cases, take weeks, months, or even years to complete, even though the customer may want it right away. Professional conduct. So unlike the hospital environment described by Dr. Mill, I don't think this is a huge challenge for us, but it's still important. We need to be professional with our customers and with ourselves. I think one of the important things to take away from this is that if, you know, when we implement this, this would apply not just to how we treat our customers, but how we treat each other. We're all ultimately customers of each other. We all use IT, so we're customers of each other. And the last is privacy and security. I think this one is a no-brainer, especially in IT. We are the caretakers and custodians of sensitive, important, private, proprietary information. So it's important that we all protect it. And the reason why we wanted to make this sort of a top-level priority in the Bill of Rights is that it's not just a commitment from InfoSec. This is a commitment that we all have to make. We all have to be committed to information security. We're all accountable for it. So that's all four of them all together. So I think, from my perspective, when I first saw this, I feel like the team really sort of met the goal. They're easy to understand. They're nice and short. And from my perspective, they really speak to who we are as an organization. I think it also covers the kinds of things that our customers want to see from us. So really, what's next? Well, I think it's important that a good Bill of Rights be owned by the people that are following it. So that's why we asked your colleagues to write it. You know, this is not something coming from the CIO or the director's table. This is something coming from your peers. But before we publish it to customers, we want to get your feedback. We want to know, do you feel that this reflects us as an organization? Does it reflect what's most important to our customers? And can we really commit to this? Is this something that we can see ourselves delivering on? And if not, why? Why not? Like I said earlier, we're all customers of each other. So what I'd like to propose is that we try it on for size internally first, before we publish this externally to our customers, and see how it fits, see how it works out. We want to get your feedback. So there's been an extensive sort of consultation and sort of a lot of group work that went into the formulation of those Bill of Rights, but we want to sort of do a broader consultation now. So I invite you, once we publish this internally, I invite you to write to any one of your directors, any member of the sort of organizing team, and let us know what you think. Still to come. So obviously we want to receive and share the feedback that we receive from you in the coming weeks and months so we can understand how to adopt and live the Bill of Rights. We want to adjust the Bill of Rights if we need to, if there are things in there that people feel they don't identify with or doesn't speak to them, or we've missed something, we certainly want to, this is really just a draft at this point. We want to sort of make sure that everyone gets a chance to give their feedback and that we adjust where we need to. There's also been discussion around at the VPNF level. There's been work been going on there to develop a similar Bill of Rights that talks about the entire organization. So we want to make sure that we're aligned with that Bill of Rights. but I think it's still okay to have one of our own that really is sort of specific to our context in IT. And then, you know, from that point forward, we want to incorporate it into the culture. How we do that is still yet to be seen, but I think it's really a matter of, you know, talking about it, making it a regular topic at director meetings, at team meetings, you know, making it a topic during PD discussions. You know, this it can't just be a poster on the wall. And then from that point, you know, once we all feel comfortable that this is something that we can really identify with and take ownership of and deliver on, well, then we would talk about publishing it and sharing it with our customers. So we're hoping fall of 2016. If it takes longer than that, that's fine, but we want to make sure it's right before we publish. And that was it. Any questions? Comments? Of course. Just hold on. Take a
sec. What comes to mind, and I think it's a good initiative, what happens if we aren't living up to it? What would be the expectations from our customers, especially, you know, the black hole resonates.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they say, that's what you're doing.
So I think the first thing we need to do is make sure that we're, especially when we talk about timeliness, we need to make sure that we're measuring, you know, what we do. So I think we have a couple of big projects that are aimed to address that. ITSM, for one, I think is going to really help. So the better we are at tracking the requests that come in and the sort of the path that that request takes through the organization, and then the better we get at being able to report on those and track them and escalate, you know, if something's fallen into a black hole, that, you know, the system automatically escalates it to a manager, a director, even as high up as the CIO, I think that will help. I think that's probably the most important thing we need to get really good at measuring. One of the other things, sort of an idea that's been tossed around, is the idea of an ombudsperson. I don't think everyone's quite sold on it yet, but the idea of someone in the organization that, you know, would be named, it would be, you know, their name would be published somewhere along with the Bill of Rights, to serve as an escalation point for situations where, as a customer, you feel that we haven't lived up to our commitment, somewhere where you could go to, you know, get answers or you know, find a remedy to your problem. All right. Thank you. So I'm going to invite... I'm going to invite Elise Cassigny, who's going to give us a talk on the Matrix Management Initiative. Yep. Matrix EC. You want that?
Which one is it?
That way.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is high. Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm here to talk about the Matrix. We did talk about it a little bit at the last town hall. Now, let me set expectations. I'm not going to be as touchy-feely as the last quartet that did this, if you remember. Actually, I was saying this morning, should I bring a big teddy bear to hug them? Because I might get caught with a hugging contest here. Basically, the Matrix is really one of when we were talking with the presenter that was talking about foundation, is knowing your role, knowing what you have to do, and in the context of a team. So I think that's right on target, knowing are we comfortable with the Matrix organization we have today is something that we really have to dig into it and make sure it's our day-to-day life. We don't even need to think about it anymore. It comes naturally for us. So that's why we thought, yeah, we talked about it last time, but we still need to show the progress and show that this is really important to all of us. So if we remember, the objectives that we had identified were, okay, let's capture why are we not so comfortable with our matrix organization right now, what are our strengths or weakness, opportunities and threats, identify the areas that we want to improve at that point, and not just identify them, but come up with some plans and real actions to put it together and be better at it. So the last time we talked here, we had a couple workshops that were done. We were up to, I would say, up to the third bullet. We were at the third bullet to do things. So what came out of the first two workshops, the main topics, were a lot about priorities, different areas of priorities, how they're, what's the criteria, what's between the priority between our group, the other group, how do we settle conflicts, should I do my work, is my work more important right now for the whole group than the other work, how do I put that in perspective? And that, all of that ties into capacity to do our work on a daily basis. So that's one of the things that really came out of there. We said, well, we have to do something about that so that people are more aware what the priorities are. Empowerment was another one to make sure, and it ties into also priorities and all that, because if you know your priorities, you know what you have to do, then it's easier to be empowered to do it and have the leverage to do it, but it has a whole bunch of other components around it also. And the third one, and not the least one, communication. I guess we hear that a lot in everything. It's always, oh, okay, I didn't know, or who do I have to talk to do this, and get the communication right. So those were the three top topics that came out. And then we decided, okay, we'll do the third workshop, which happened in January, I think. And we did focus more... and we took the focus of saying, well, my team is more than an organization structure, because that reflects a lot the matrix organization we're at today. Key points. So out of those three topics, we sort of grouped them with all the key points that were brought out in the matrix sessions, the first two workshops. And as I said, priority. And people, what came out a lot was, we don't have a dashboard, we don't have... capacity planning that is really structured. We don't have all these things that we'd like to see. How can we put something more, get plans and action plans on those topics? So we did some groups. So we had a couple of groups working on priorities on the third workshop. We had another one working on empowerment. Other than priorities and all that, what else could we do to empower people, and how can we feel more empowered in our day-to-day job, and got some great ideas from that too. And two other groups were working with communication and another one with innovation. So out of that, we got a bunch of action plans. And now where we're at, we're reviewing all these action plans, trying to put them together, and because we can't tackle everything at the same time. A lot of topics crossed over. If you want to do priorities, you have to do communication. If you want to do other stuff, you need to cross over all these things. So right now what we're doing, we're consolidating everything, looking at some opportunities we are already doing in some areas. A few managers are right now working for capacity with Patrick that was here. So some of the opportunities that came out of Matrix might be in parallel opportunities that will go either in operations or other things. So we're trying to group them to see what makes sense and how we can address them in the future. And put some priority, look at what's short-term, mid-term, and all that. Once we've done that, we'll go back to a third workshop to validate that with the managers and all that, and get real action plan going and get into action. So that was a quick overview. I don't know if you guys have any questions or comments or...
I promise to be nice.
No, it's not staged. It's actually not staged. And knowing me and knowing Elise may be slightly worried, so seriously. Right now, the workshops and all the planning has been done a lot at the managers and directors level with Guylaine, of course. And I know that after the last presentation, the huggy, touchy-feely one, we did get a lot of questions about how can I get involved, how can I participate. So I was wondering if there's any plans on bringing the rest of IT into this, and when would that be so people can volunteer. So.
Yeah. We need to, as I was saying, we're consolidating, and then we get action plans. Once we have the action plans, some opportunities, let's say, I don't know, I'll say anything, it might not be the ones that are going to go there, but let's say we talk about communication between teams or something. Then we'll get a group working on that, and it can be employees or managers or whoever wants to work on that. So I think we're very close to that. We just need the last workshop to make sure, okay, are we aligned with all the ones we want to do, which ones will be done in some groups with employees, which ones we have to sort of do other decisions before they go down there. Or where can people contribute, and who would be the best people to contribute? It's not a matter of it's not a top-down approach. It's just a matter of having a few people organizing the work to make sure that we're not that we're focusing, and things will happen at this point. Because there was a lot of great ideas, but we can't do everything, so we're just trying to organize it right now.
Yes.
Hello? Okay. I think this was excellent because it's the first time that I've heard all the problems listed properly, concisely, the ones that I face anyway, with actual solutions that we can truly implement in the immediate future. We're not discussing anymore. We're actually going to do something. And I'm just amazed. Thank you.
No, I can't say much more than that. Now it's time for me to run, and no more questions. No, anyone has any comments, questions on it? Feel free to ask any of the managers and all that. Bring up the information if there's things that aren't clear or very, you say, well, we should really, I'm really interested in working in that. Let people know, and we'll get on to action. Yes? Right now, we have looked, there's a few criteria. Is it short-term, long-term? Can we act on it right away? Does it take a lot of efforts that we'll, and what are the ones that will give us the more wins over it? So it's more that way, saying what will bring us forward the quickest. And as I said, we are doing a list right now and organizing it. Then we'll review it with the managers and all that. And if some are not clear enough, we'll do actions on them to make sure that we're really addressing the right stuff. So that's how we're... All right. So I guess we're getting into the question period right now. So I'll invite my colleagues to join the panel.
So, as usual, we ask people if they have a question that they prefer to send a written question instead of asking them here. So we got four questions from two employees. So I'm going to do them first, and then we'll open the floor for any other questions you may have. So the first one was around the IT self-study, the cyclical review. I think most of you have, if not all, have gotten it. There was a citation that said, unfortunately, not as many improvements could be implemented for unionized staff, given the legal framework around such positions. Of course, there's a collective agreement, so gives us less flexibility. In addition, this group was also more directly impacted by recent staff reduction effort and have unresolved concern regarding career mobility within McGill. That is an issue that has been plaguing us for years. We've been pushing on HR for years. So it's the mobility between Munasa and Munaka, or vice versa. Unfortunately, it still hasn't been resolved. We had been promised by HR, I think, 2 years ago. As you may know, the agreement between Munasa and HR, and McGill, is renewed every year, and the new rules comes into effect on the 1st of June. That was something that was promised to us 2 years ago. It wasn't done, still not done, and to this day we do not know what the next agreement for the 1st of June will contain. So we don't know if this is going to change, unfortunately, and it is completely out of our power. The second question is, are there any plans to tackle the lack of overall engagement in the unionized staff? So that comes from another result. It comes from the survey, the engagement survey, where, in fact, we saw that the unionized staff engagement was significantly lower than the non-unionized staff. So there is quite a lot of things that are currently done on the engagement side, and a lot of those initiatives are not necessarily geared specifically towards unionized versus non-unionized. I think it's more broad than that, especially what has been done in the pilots in ICS. There is participation from all levels of staff. So those are going to be I don't think that we'll ever do things that are specifically union staff geared. I don't think that that's the way we see the way we work. I don't think that's the way we see the teams. But there's quite a lot, because although there is a difference, I think we can raise the level of engagement in all categories, and things should be done in those areas. So in terms of plan, we are... there is an extension of what was done in the ICS group that will reach now every unit. So the engagement work group, the blog and everything, is going to be open to all different units. There's the work that's being done on the matrix. So at this time, the matrix workshop has been mostly at the management level. But as Elise presented earlier, everything that's going to be identified there as projects, we will ask for whomever is interested in working on those different work groups to volunteer and engage themselves. Although in some cases it may be more as a project or things that we roll in. So, for example, there may be things that will roll in to the ITSM or to the R2R or different other projects where it would be pertinent. But when it is, we'll have standalone work groups, then, of course, they will be open to participation to whomever is interested in working in them. There's a Bill of Rights that we're working on. I think that also... the sense of what exactly are we committing to, what is the relationship that we want to have with our users. Those are also elements that I think inform the way we see our work and the way that we see our day-to-day life and our engagement into the McGill community. The ITSM, as we said, is going to have a huge impact, I think, in terms of addressing some of the issues around clarity, around process, clarity in terms of reporting, visibility, things like the timeliness aspect of the Bill of Rights, with which we feel, let's say, less able to commit today, and we would like to be able to commit. I think that having those tools that will give us a clear track to be able to follow every request and know exactly where they are and how we're communicating back to the community. There's also the HRIT skill inventory, the project that that we're currently doing to support career development objectives so that we can know where are the competencies, but also have conversation on the gap between the competency that someone may currently have and the competency that they would need to acquire to move into other positions, in terms of translating that into development plans. So there's also increased participation on those working group. So when we're going to expand the engagement work group, of course, we'll create new groups which will encourage more participation from more staff. One of the things also that may have an indirect impact, one of the things that comes back as a recurring theme, and it was a theme in the cyclical review, and it was also a theme when we did the matrix, is the communication part. So it's always the same thing. We tend to under-tool ourselves because we want to focus so much on helping our customers. Often we don't help ourselves, and we don't give ourselves the tools that will make us more efficient. So one of the things that we're going to do is, even though it's hard to see where the money's coming from, but is we will create a lead communication officer position in IT. A lot of units at McGill have a communication specialist working for them. It's not our case. We have, of course, the training and communication group in ICS, but it's not at the level of broad strategic communications like we see. Other units have people that come from the communication, central communication, that are kind of delegated, a bit like we have Elliot from finance and Lucy from HR. So we don't have that, but I think we need that. We need that that higher perspective and having kind of a global plan. And we see in the project where we invest in change management and communication, like the ITSM project, for example, with Hélène, We really see the difference that can bring in terms of success. It's not sufficient to do things. You also need to communicate them and have people understanding what's happening. So I think that also will have an impact. So third question, second person. A little over a year ago, Michael DeGrappa announced at Management Forum that the university was working on recognizing time spent working as a casual. When considering years of service, has there been any progress on this? So it links back to the preceding question. We still do not know what will be the change that will be made in the RENESA agreement on the 1st of June. Currently, the year of service as casual, when they are linked to somebody becomes then a permanent employee, are used only in the area of calculation of vacation entitlement. That's the only area where it is taken into account. I think that in terms of recognizing years of services, it would be very pertinent to consider them, but we don't know yet if that will be addressed. As soon as we know what's going to be in the June agreement, we'll let you know. Second question, second person. In the My Workplace document, 2015 Lean Learning Organization Survey Results and Analysis, there is a section on text response to the survey. Apparently, there were 27 responses, 24 negative, 3 neutral, where IT was specifically mentioned, but no details are given. So have you seen those responses, and can you comment on their content? Are any of IT initiatives and objectives addressing these concerns? So it's nice to see that some of you read those reports. So there were 1,094 comments, written comments in that survey, and 27 mentioned IT. In many instances, there were very long comments on very diversified topics. So initially those were not distributed. And the reason they were not distributed is that they were guaranteed, participants to the survey were guaranteed anonymity. And most of those comments, if they are read in the unit where the employee that did them works, would be easily identified. So they were not distributed. But the AVPs ask to have the comments that concern them specifically. So HR had 23 comments. The AVP HR got the 23 comments, not the 1,094, but just the 23. I got the 27 for IT. Facilities got their comments, etc. So I had read them at the time, and yes, they did inform our process, but I went back because I didn't remember exactly. Most of the comments were around archaic systems, manual processes that should be replaced by new systems. So I think the core of it was around that. There were a few, and I didn't feel that was negative at all. We're saying that investment in IT is essential, that we should be putting money. So that's something that it's now been addressed by the roadmap and the funding of the roadmap. We're really, when we define that roadmap as being deferred maintenance, I think it's very pertinent as a comment, because we have underinvested in our systems when we compare to other institutions, and in many areas, our system are dated. We also have a significant number of our processes that are still manual, a lot of them. So that, of course, is something that has been addressed in many of our peer institutions, but the projects that we are currently working on, especially the R2R project, I think will address a lot of that. And there were finally a few comments that were around, and we've read that in other surveys, around the bureaucracy, the perception of more bureaucratic processes. And I think that ties back to many of the presentations that we had today around changing the role in IT, which is, from a Gartner perspective, when you look at maturity level, the lowest level you can be as an IT group is being an order taker. So being someone, okay, do this, fine, do that. Do this, do that, do this, and we do that. We don't look, does it address the problem? Is it the suitable way of doing it? Does it answer the needs of the end user or the needs of the order giver? So, unfortunately, when you want to change that, it creates a lot of insatisfaction in the group that was the order giver. It may increase satisfaction in the rest of the population that suddenly have people that start to take care of their requirements, but it does create frustration. But asking our users, why do you want us to do this? What problems do you think this will address? Is it the best solution on the market or that we can do to answer those requirements? Because one of the problem with working in job taker or job giver environment is if the person is not aware of what are the new ways of doing things or the new solutions that are available or the new tools, they won't think about them. They won't ask for them. So you remain in a very same old environment. You don't evolve towards new technology. So changing that is not always easy. It creates frustration. But what's interesting is that we're starting to see that we have some of our users that are kind of starting to like having another level of discussion, and we get feedback on that. And one area that really surprised me is when you look at, for example, the banner upgrade. So we may think that's not new technology. We're doing technical upgrade. But the way we did it, I think the plan for that upgrade was redone 3 or 4 times because we were looking at it and we didn't feel comfortable that we had the level of detail and the level of precision in the plan to really make sure that that upgrade would go smoothly. We did dry runs. To my knowledge, it was one of the first time that we did that in a comprehensive way. And some of our users were very frustrated when we asked them to do that. Hey, I don't have time to do that. I'm overworked with there's so many conflicting priorities, and why would I do that? But what happened is when we did the upgrade, it went very smoothly. And I was surprised. I found myself in a dinner about a week after the upgrade with colleagues that were mainly from the academic side of the institution, and they were all telling me, oh, wow, that went so well. We were so happy, and we got the system a day in advance, and oh, wow, that was fantastic. And it worked smoothly. There were no issues. Oh, a bit of problems at registration the first day, but yeah, nothing bad. Frankly, it's the first time I got so much positive feedback for an activity that we did. And I think that the level of planning, the rigor that was put into the process, really delivered on the quality of the result. And I think that's starting to be appreciated. And a lot of users that had complained about the dry run came back and told us, well, finally, it was a good idea. It was a good thing to do that. We should do that in the future. So I think that transition is always difficult. Each time you bring change, you go back a bit, you know. But then you move forward. And if you give their chance to try those things and go and move ahead, you get success. So frankly, out of 1,000 more comments, to have 27 comments on IT, and we may feel when we look at the numbers that were sent by the person who questioned, 24 negative, 3 neutral. Well, of the 1,000 comments, 800 were negative. So it's kind of, I think people when they write, they write when they're not happy. And to have only 24 of them out of 1,000 that are concerning IT, I think it's not too bad. Although it is always an issue when we do those types of surveys, it's really fun to have those comments. But the notion of anonymity makes it difficult to use afterwards. But at least in this instance, the AVP got them, and it did inform what we did in terms of planning afterwards for different services. So those covers the written questions that we got. I don't know if they are, I hope they are, additional questions for your panel coming from the floor.
Come on.
Thank you for answering those questions, Gilad. I think you have an idea that some of them came from me. I was interested, Hugo, in your presentation when you were talking about client service and the trust that we build with our clients over small items as well as the big ones. And I think one of our challenges now is as we move towards bigger projects and doing less small enhancements with our clients, we aren't getting those weekly, monthly successes maybe that we used to have with them. We aren't putting something into production. And that doesn't then build that little trust in dribs and drabs. You've got this big project, and maybe there's delays in projects, there are challenges in projects. How can we build that trust incrementally? What are those small things that we can do with our clients to get that?
Well, I'll talk about my portfolio. I think it can relate to other directors' portfolio as well. But I think that if you cannot break down your project into smaller deliverables to have those quick wins that are visible, you need to define your communication strategy as well as your change management so that they're getting involved and they're seeing progress along the project and not only at the end. So by providing more regular feedback, either by demonstrating products, by demonstrating features, by we kind of did that as well into ITSM, having those champions that were exposed earlier to the even a vanilla version of the product, so to serve as ambassadors, those are the kind of things where they see it progressing. In some cases, if you can do it, it's just keeping them informed that we're at that stage. That's what we worked on into the last few weeks. We're working on that, or we're awaiting this because we want to make sure that we're grabbing exactly what are your requirements to make sure that we're not going too far ahead into a wrong path without you being there telling us if we're okay. So I think that when we were talking about team, when we heard about team, I think it's beyond IT. It's also within our clients, and by involving them as a change agent, they're supporting as well whatever we're gonna try to move forward. We had examples in the call center anywhere. For example, the CCX, the new solution for call center, where we got involved, we got our client involved at some point, and I think that we should have done it even earlier, down the, probably because it would have eased up a lot of the transition that we lived through as we were going in, and that was lessons learned from us. But those are the kind of examples, even if you have a big project, like network upgrade is a very big thing. Like and people won't even see the results because it's literally IT plumbing. But down the road, putting it up front, putting it forward, informing people, just talking about it, then people kind of see that they're progressing. They see the buzz that is within the team. You keep them appraised. I think that's kind of the key solution that you can use, even if you have bigger projects. Nice try, Ariel.
Thank you all. I guess not a question, but I just want to make sure that everyone here in the room is aware. Rosa sent an email yesterday regarding a photo contest. So we're looking for a new picture in the Office 365 ADFS logon page. So please all contribute. I'm trying to put together a prize package, so details aren't there, but I'll post them as I get them. Thank you.
And to answer the question, yes, that was framed.
How much do we charge for that ad?
I think it's wonderful that we challenge ourselves and we look at how we can improve personally and collectively. But I think it's also important to recognize what we do well and how we can leverage our strengths. And I find sometimes in our performance dialogues and our objective setting, we're often focusing on what we need to improve. And I wonder if there isn't a role there for also taking the time to say, what are we doing really well and how can we best leverage that to serve the McGill community? I wondered if anybody had any comments on that.
Maybe one of the what Guylaine said in terms of having that overall communication person, higher level strategic communication for IT, not for individual, but as a team, one of the things that we recognize in that was justifying the rationale behind pushing forward that kind of position that we want to have within IT is actually selling us. We're doing a bad job of selling ourselves for what we do great. And because people just remember the last unsuccessful relationship they had with us and they don't remember everything we did great. So part of that communication challenge that we're looking into, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's also one of the purpose that we want that position to exist is how to sell better what we're doing. And in some cases, there are things that our clients feel that it's cumbersome. Guylaine was talking about the BNS and they how they feel. Why are you questioning my requirement? Why are you questioning me in terms of what I need? And in some cases, it's because it's a legal requirement that we now have to demonstrate to the government that we need to do a proper assessment of that. And when you're explaining that to your client, say, oh, okay, so you're in the same pain that I am, that to having to report to the government. And then some, at that time, it's no longer you trying to impose them a way. It's how you are building that relationship afterward, but at least it comes to a rationale for them. And I think that in the context of global IT, this is one of the area where we want to leverage and why we wanted that position to try to leverage better and communicating better what are our successes.
If I can take a turn to make a plug now, I think sort of just partly answer your question too. One of the things that the employee engagement work group in ICS has really focused on over the last 2 years, it's not the only thing that we're doing, but it's probably one of the top themes, is recognition and appreciation. So I think, you know, Hugo, you talked about sort of ringing our bell as an organization and what are the things we do great as a team. I think it's also important to celebrate and recognize the successes that we have as individuals. So as we expand the EWG sort of into the other IT units, we hope to sort of bring that sort of spirit of recognition and appreciation into other areas, because it's important.
And okay. Also, I think from an individual perspective, it's one of the issues that we have when we do the PDs, and why we added the sections around skill is that it's a human tendency to kind of look at what's not working or what could be improved, or but we also need that balance of recognizing what's working well. And one of the reproach that was done to the PD process a few years ago when we started working groups on that was you're only looking at the projects. You're not looking at our performance from a day-to-day perspective, or, you know, our job, what we do every day. And I think that was a very justified comment, and that's why we added that section. I think also in the training that we give to the managers, and it's everybody has to learn in that process. You know, the managers that's giving the feedback, but also the employee in terms of also themselves, kind of taking that coaching, like our Pierre Vercheval was saying. We also need to look at that part of it, which is the day-to-day. And I think the new form is better. It's a work in progress, but it is getting better. But I also think that it has to. We need to have that continuous process in not only improving the form, but also improving our abilities to do it properly, to have that conversation in a very constructive manner, and to be able to focus on what's good from an individual perspective to what, and there's always things that need improvement on both sides. And so I think that dialogue is important. So there are things, I think, that are done at an IT level, but it's important also to address the individual and what's the contribution of everybody in whatever we do. I think I would add also in terms of user satisfaction and what are we doing is that, and I know you come from ISR, so that makes sense that you're focused on project. But we do also a lot of request fulfillment, which is providing different services that exists, that are things that we do. And we do that on a daily basis, and many units provide all sorts of services on a daily basis. So those are also things that we do for our users. It's not only the project. It's everything that's done on a day-to-day basis to support our users in all their activities. So there are things where we can demonstrate that we're able to give timely, good service with a good client service approach.
Have a great lunch. Thanks.